Trib Live Radio presents Panther Lair, hosted by Pitt insider Chris Peek of PantherLair.com. A full hour of Pitt football, basketball, and recruiting talk. Trib Total Media, see what's next. Now, here's your host, Chris Peek.
You know, while we all were grousing preseason about how Pitt's schedule was set up and how they had to go on the road, you know, five out of the first seven games on the road and three out of their first four ACC games on the road, and we were complaining about how the ACC did Pitt no favors and Pitt did Pitt no favors by scheduling Akron and Iowa on the road and all this, and we were so upset and complaining about it all offseason and throughout the start of the season, we kind of forgot one little angle to help sort of alleviate those concerns. And here it is. Maybe you just go win those games on the road. And then if you win those games on the road, then you've got a backloaded schedule with four out of the five out of your final five games being played at home. And we forgot that Pitt could actually do that. While we complained about it and said, well, that's just not fair. The ACC really kind of screwed Pitt over. And, you know, why do they got five out of their first seven on the road? Well, here's an idea. Maybe you go win those road games and you set yourself up for success later in the season. And that's certainly what Pitt did on Saturday, 17-13 win at Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, a tough place to play. Pitt has only won there once prior to Saturday, and they got their second win ever at Lane Stadium, 17-13 over the Hokies. Of course, they also won at Akron. They lost at Iowa, but 2-1 on the road so far, that's not a bad way to start the season. Let's be honest, though. I mean, I'm delaying the inevitable. We're not here to talk about winning road games. We're not here to talk about the fact that Pitt's 1-0 in the ACC, which is a good start. It's what they started last year as well. We're not here to talk about how the ACC Coastal Division looks even more wide open and winnable than it did a week ago when we talked a whole lot about how the ACC Coastal Division looked wide open and winnable. Hey, Georgia Tech is now 0-2. Georgia Tech, the big bad, the bully, the team that was supposed to run away with this division or at least be the best team in the division is 0-2. And if you look at win percentages and probabilities, I saw something online that said they have about a 2% chance of winning the Coastal Division. But that's not why we're here. That's not what we're here to talk about. That's not why you're listening to this Panther Lair postgame podcast on Trib Live Radio. We're here because of defense. And what else is there to talk about when you're talking about Pitt's win at Virginia Tech on Saturday? Defense. And we keep coming back. We had these cliches, these things we said over and over again prior to the season. And basically, there were two things. There were two common sentiments, two sentences every Pitt fan, every Pitt media person, and every Pitt, you know, administrator or coach or player sort of said behind closed doors. They wouldn't say this on the record, but it always came back to two things. One, the offense is going to be really good. And two, if the defense can just get a little bit better, just a little bit better, this team can really have some success. Well, we were wrong about... Well, I don't know if we were wrong about the second one. The first one about the offense is still TBD, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But the defense, what we've seen is this defense not just get a little bit better, but get a whole lot better. And sort of the subheading to that idea about the defense just needing to get a little bit better was the idea that Pat Narduzzi, by virtue of his presence alone, would make this defense better just by being Pat Narduzzi. If he's everything he's cracked up to be, everything he is, you know, that he built his reputation on at Michigan State, if that's all legitimate, then just by being Pat Narduzzi and being in the film room and on the sidelines for Pitt will make this defense just a little bit better. Well, he made it a whole lot better. This defense improved by a whole lot. And it's positively dominating. You have two games this season where Pitt has held an opponent to 105 yards of offense or less. Twice. Akron, 105 yards. Virginia Tech, 100 yards of total offense. An FBS team, a perennial contender. A team that has not necessarily a reputation for good offense, but a team that certainly was moving the ball this season. Virginia Tech came into this game averaging 450 yards per game of total offense. Pitt held them to 100 yards of total offense. Virginia Tech entered the game averaging 205.8 yards per game on the ground this season. Pitt gave up 9 rushing yards. 9. You emphasize that number for, or you repeat that number for emphasis, Because I feel like if I just glossed over it, you'd think I misspoke. It was 9 rushing yards. Now, that's affected by sack totals and all that, but they gave up 9 rushing yards. The end number is 9 when you look in this at the box score. And, you know, I tweeted this after the game on Saturday night, and I had a tweet that sounded a lot like what I just said about 9 rushing yards, and I repeated 9 multiple times. And somebody kind of jokingly replied to me and said, "Hey, Chris, how many yards did they give up?" Obviously, because I mentioned it multiple times. But I feel like when you have a number that stark, you have to say it over and over again because you just can't get your head around it. 9 rushing yards. Sam Warren at the Post-Gazette joked on Twitter, which one of Virginia Tech's 9 rushing yards was your favorite? And it was that kind of day. And this defense has now, it's become dominant. And you can look at each game. They've given up 8 total touchdowns, 8 offensive touchdowns to opponents through 4 games. So 2 touchdowns per game. They gave up 3 to Youngstown State, 3 to Iowa, and 1 each to Akron and Virginia Tech. And it's not really hard to look at each play and kind of see where the breakdown was. And it's all correctable stuff. It's all correctable. You don't see many situations where you say, well, they just got physically beat there. They weren't able to hang with that team or on that play or hang with that receiver. It was all just, it was a blown coverage here, it was a missed fundamental here, a bad angle, a missed tackle, that kind of thing. And that was the case with Virginia Tech yesterday. Virginia Tech had, I always like to talk about the explosive plays, the runs of 10 yards or more, or the passes of 15 yards or more. Virginia Tech had 3 of them yesterday. 2 runs that gained 10 yards or more, and 1 pass. And the pass was like a 28-yard pass. One of the runs was like a 22-yard quarterback draw or something like that. And each of those, it was just a bad fundamental play. I mean, it was a missed tackle. It was a bad angle. Nobody really outplayed Pitt to make those plays, and that's kind of scary for future opponents. Now, this defense is going to have its moments. It's going to have its lapses where it gives up plays and it gives up points and it gives up yards. But boy, this unit's looking really, really good right now. 100 yards of total offense to Virginia Tech. I mentioned that's happened twice this year, that they've held an opponent to 105 yards of total offense or less twice this season, once against Akron, once against Virginia Tech. In the previous 17 seasons prior to this, 1998 through 2014, that happened twice, that Pitt held an opponent to 105 yards of offense or less. Delaware, last year, they only had like 64 yards. And Akron, way back in 1998, had, I think, 97 yards of total offense. So in 17 years, it happened twice, and it's now happened twice in the last 4 games. There's something special happening with this defense. And I don't think I'm opening your eyes on that. I think Pitt fans realize it. Pitt fans see what this defense is doing. And it's pretty impressive. It's really impressive. And you can go through basically every number that came out of this game. We're going to have our 3 key stats, as we always do. We'll have our good, the bad, and the ugly. But basically every defensive stat from this game, as you look through the box score, you just say, wow. Wow. That's dominating. That's a dominating defensive performance. And Pitt now is in a position where the defense, contrary to what we all expected prior to the season, the defense is what's keeping this team in games and winning this team games. Because in the fourth quarter on Saturday, Pitt's offense left the door open. Pitt's offense continually refused to close the door. Pitt's offense did virtually nothing in the fourth quarter on Saturday. But the defense kept closing the door. No matter what position they were put in, they closed the door. Yeah, Pitt's offense in the fourth quarter. First drive, they took about 6 minutes off the clock, ran 10 plays and gained a total of 39 yards and punted. The next drive came off the interception, I think the Mike Caprera interception. They ran 4 plays, gained 1 yard, and missed a field goal. The next drive, they ran 3 plays, lost 6 yards, and punted. And then the final drive, it was kind of their victory formation drive after the Terrace Webb interception. 3 plays, 4 yards or whatever it was. It was just around the clock. Pitt's offense did nothing, you know, in the fourth quarter. I mean, let me look at that number just again just to see the yardage they gained. So 38 yards. We'll take out the victory formation. So 34 yards on 17 plays. in the fourth quarter while they're holding on to a 17-13 lead. And we got plenty to say about the offense. There are obviously questions and some interesting developments. I thought there were some things that came out of that game where you said, well, we've seen these coaches on a couple instances be willing to change things up, either in their game planning coming into this game and also over the course of the game. We saw things change and with positive results. And sometimes kind of head-scratching positive results because they did some things that worked and then they didn't go back to them. But we'll talk about that offense. But it comes back to defense right now. Defense is the big story with this game. And sometimes you come out of games and you say, well, let's look for the story behind the story. Man, there's no story behind this story. The story is the defense right now. You know, you don't have to look deep or come up with and be clever about something. I mean, this is all everyone's talked about through the weekend. On Sunday, people tweeting about Pitt were tweeting about Pitt's defense. And even on the message boards, there are complaints about the offense because inevitably that's what's going to happen. But man, it's all positive with this defense right now. And why not? Why wouldn't it be? They're playing at a very, very high level. Nate Peterman, Pitt's quarterback, he said it best. Said, our defense is really a championship-level defense. I don't know what the next 8 games are going to hold, but I can tell you that right now, after 4 games, I agree with Peterman. This is a championship-level defense. All right, lots to get to on the Panther Lair postgame this week. Of course, I didn't even mention Chris Peek. You should know that by now. If you're listening to this podcast, you should know who I am. But Chris Peek, publisher of PantherLair.com, the website, most comprehensive source of Pitt sports news, Panther-Lair.com, Pittsburgh.Rivals.com, if you prefer to go that way, on Twitter, at PantherLair, PantherLair. We're on the Facebook, too. I guess they don't call it the Facebook anymore, but we're on Facebook as well. You can find us all over the place. Comprehensive coverage of Pitt sports. And right now, there's a lot to talk about with this football team. We get together here on Triple Live Radio every Monday morning at 9 a.m. for the Panther Lair postgame. We break down the most recent game, and that's really what we're focused on. We have the Panther Lair show on Thursday afternoons at 2 p.m., and that's when we really kind of look forward to the next game or talk about the big themes or topics surrounding the team throughout the course of the week, get into recruiting and that kind of stuff. But right now, this is the postgame, and what we do is we talk about the game. And like I say, you can try and look for the story behind the story. You can look for the hidden stats or the things that really tell what happened in the game. I'll tell you what happened in the game. Pitt's defense kicked ass, and that's really what it comes down to. And they played as good a defensive game as we've seen in a long time. I mean, there was the Delaware game in 2014. They gave up 64 yards of total offense. They had 3 interceptions. They had a handful of sacks, and that was great. You know, they shut out Delaware. This game yesterday was more impressive because they're playing an FBS opponent, an ACC Coastal Division opponent, in a very tough place to play, and they dominated. I mean, they dominated. And whatever, you can probably look at a lot of different reasons why this defense is playing so well, but it's Pat Narduzzi. I mean, it comes back to Pat Narduzzi. And he has not just made this defense a little bit better by his influence. He's made it a whole lot better. And you saw the product yesterday. And we'll see how it continues throughout the next 8 games through the course of the season. All right, lots to get to here in the Panther Lair postgame. Of course, we'll get our good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll get some key stats. We'll hear from a few players after the game, a couple of the interesting guys. We'll talk about the offense because there were some changes. There were some changes in coming into the game. They did some different things and then some changes they made throughout the course of the game. We'll look at both of those situations. And then we'll also look at 2 fourth downs in the fourth quarter that I thought were pretty interesting and pretty telling. We'll look at Tyler Boyd. Not his best game on Saturday. 5 catches, 48 yards. A pretty big drop late in the fourth quarter. And also a muff punt that, I don't know, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about Boyd and see what we think. And then, of course, we're going to talk about a lot about this defense because there's a lot to break down when talking about that side of the ball. So plenty to get to as we break down and reevaluate Pitt's 17-13 win at Virginia Tech on Saturday. Don't go anywhere. It's the Panther Lair postgame here on Triple Live.
Get crazy fast, high-speed internet, up to 20 megs with no data caps from Consolidated Communications. You'll have all the speed you need to watch videos with no buffering, game online with no lag or glitches, and share the speed on multiple devices with no delays. Get up to 20 megs for just $20 per month for 2 years. Plus, add TV and save even more. Go to consolidated.com or call 844-YOUR-CCI. Service is not available in all areas and may vary by location. Phone line required. Taxes, fees, surcharges, and any items not in the bundle are extra. Other conditions apply.
Now back to Chris Peak on the Panther Lair Show on Trib Live Radio.
Welcome back to the Panther Lair postgame, Trib Live Radio, Chris Peak. Breaking down Pitt's 17-13 win at Virginia Tech on Saturday. Just the second time the Panthers have ever won at Lane Stadium in Blacksburg. So that's pretty notable in and of itself. The Panthers now have won 6 of 7 against Virginia Tech, which is a pretty interesting stat. But again, only the second time they've ever won in Blacksburg. It's always a tough game. And look, Virginia Tech might not be very good. And I'm willing to concede that. I think it's very likely. If you want to tell me Virginia Tech stinks, I'll tell you that's okay. You're right. They do. But the reality is they have piled up some yards this season. Maybe they did it against Furman and Purdue. But you know what? You pile up yards, you pile up yards. And if you end up, if you face an offense that's put up yards, then obviously your challenge is to slow them down. And even if it's a bad offense, okay, and I'm willing to concede that Virginia Tech might be an inherently bad offense with bad players and a bad scheme. If you're a good defense, you should be able to shut them down. If you're a good defense, you should keep them in check. And to further the point, I think even if you take advantage of a bad offense, it's one thing to beat a bad offense and hold them to less than 300 yards of total offense, or hold them to under 100 yards rushing. You know, because you can put in a good defensive performance and give up 250 total, or say 285 or 290 or even 310 total and 95 on the ground. And that can still be a good defensive performance. But to only give up 100 yards of total offense, something that prior to this season you'd only done twice in the last 17 years, to only give up 9 rushing yards, which largely comes from the fact that you had 7 sacks, that's not just putting in a good defensive performance, even against a bad offense. That's dominating. Okay? And even against bad offenses, good defenses don't automatically dominate. Good defenses might put in a good game, but they don't necessarily dominate. Not the way Pitt did against Virginia Tech. I'm trying to look real quick. I want to find the stats here. Because if we're talking about expectations or tempering kind of reviews or reactions. Against Ohio State. Now, you would say that Ohio State is a very good defense, would you not? Or Ohio State is a very good team. Virginia Tech had 320 yards of total offense against Ohio State. And 128 yards on the ground. Okay, so Ohio State, when playing this very bad offense with a starting quarterback, I guess you want to make that, or at least for part of the game, they had that starting quarterback. Although his replacement, Brennan Motley, who Pitt played against on Saturday, has played well in the time since he became the starter for the last 3 games. But Ohio State still gave up 128 yards on the ground to Virginia Tech, and 320 yards of total offense. And then in the last 3 games, admittedly, Furman, Purdue, and East Carolina, 583, 471, and 439. If you're a terrible offense, one of the worst in college football, you're not putting up 500 yards, even against an FCS opponent. You're not putting up 470, even at Purdue, who stinked. You're not even putting up 439, even at East Carolina. You know, you want to tell me, well, they didn't, Virginia Tech's offense was slowed by the weather. Well, the weather was terrible at East Carolina, too, and they still went for 439 total and 158 on the ground. This was a dominating performance by a defense that played really, really well yesterday. Now, I don't know what that means they'll do against Georgia Tech. I don't know what that means they'll do against Duke, who, what did they score, 9 points the other day? I don't know what that means for Pitt down the road, but I do know that they were dominating in their win over Virginia Tech. I don't think there's any question about it. And I'll tell you one thing that really stuck out to me. And this is, I know I made jokes in that opening segment about, not trying to look for the story behind the story or the hidden stats or anything. But this is one that's notable to me. Pitt's defensive players, right, accounted for 58 tackles, 58 recorded tackles. Of those 58, 36 were recorded as tackle assists. Only 22 were solo tackles. By contrast, Virginia Tech had 62 total tackles. 41 of those 62 were solo stops. So Virginia Tech had 41 solo tackles and 21 tackle assists. Pitt, it was flipped the other way. 22 solo tackles, 36 tackle assists. And you look down the list, nobody for Pitt had more than 3 solo tackles. Macalambos and Juan Price had 3 solo tackles. Everybody else had 2 or fewer. But in tackle assists, Galambos and Nicholas Grigsby had 7 each. And Avante Maddox and Jordan Whitehead and Terrish Webb had 3 each. And a bunch of guys had 2. And so you have, you know, let's see, 3, 6, 7, 8 guys who had at least 3 total tackles. But nobody had more than 3 solo tackles. Why am I talking about this? What does this mean? It's this swarming mentality. It's not just one player making a tackle. On a majority of the plays, it was, or on a huge portion of the plays, there were multiple defenders getting to the ball. And that's something that these coaches always talked about. See the ball, get to the ball. You know, see ball, get ball, or you know, run to the football and all that. And they stressed it so much in spring camp, and they stressed it so much in training camp. And they're not unique in that regard. Every defensive coach talks about running to the football. That's what they do. That's what they stress. They have drills made for this, and you can watch Pitt practice and see those drills in action. And I've seen, believe me, I've covered Pitt for 10 years, so I've seen a lot of coaching staffs come through here. And they all do drills where they're running to the football. This defense is really acting it. They're living up to it. They're performing what the coaches are stressing, as evidenced by the fact that nobody on this team had more than 3 solo tackles. And I used to look at those kind of stats, and I'd have more respect for the guys who piled up the solo tackles. And I still do to some extent. If you pile up solo tackles, good for you. You're out there, you're making plays. But as a defense, and you see a bunch of those tackle assists, that tells you something about how this defense is playing. And what it tells me is that they're all getting to the football. And that's how you end up with, you know, Galambos and Grigsby have 7 tackle assists each. Linebackers, very active. You know, Bam Bradley had 2 tackle assists. Mike Caprera had 1. The linebackers, just active, swarming to the ball. That was something, I think, in spring. In the spring, a number of players talked about last year, the sort of backside pursuit wasn't there. If a play went to the other side of the field, the guys on the far side didn't necessarily stay in the play, basically. They kind of gave up on the play. And that's a bad habit. That's a bad habit. You need everybody running to the play and running to the ball. This defense seems to be really acting on it. And it's impressive. It's really impressive to see. We'll just jump right from there into the good, the bad, and the ugly. Because the good, obviously, from this game was the defense. And there's, I said it before, you want to look down this box score. I've got the game book right here with all the stats. And, I mean, whatever you want to look at. 4 of 13 on third down. Let me see. I talked about the total offense. 100 yards of total offense. 9 rushing yards. 9 of 20 passing. 7 sacks. We haven't even talked about the sacks yet. Probably because that's going to be one of the 3 key stats. Because that's so huge for this defense. Particularly when we inevitably come back to comparing last year to this year. Those sack numbers are just so big. Because they're just piling them up. 7 sacks yesterday. Juan Price led the charge. He had 2 sacks. Let me see who else. Galambos had 1. Bam Bradley had 1. Mike Caprera had his first career sack. Daryl Render had 1. And Nicholas Grigsby had 0.5. Oh, and Tyreek Jarrett had 0.5. That's just dominant defense. I mean, they're getting into the backfield. They're disrupting plays. They had 11 tackles for loss. Yesterday, Price led the charge there, 3.5. A bunch of guys had 1.5. Galambos and Bradley and Render had 1.5 tackles for loss each. It's a disruptive defense. And we'll talk later in the week more about comparing last year to this year and the changes and why this defense is so much better. But impacting the backfield, getting into the backfield and making plays is such a big part of it. maybe the biggest part of it. It's really, it's so impressive what they've been doing. I mean, that takes pressure off your secondary, and guys can make plays. They're taking advantage of some of the skill sets that these guys have. A guy like Juan Price, a guy like Nicholas Grigsby, they're being used to the best of their abilities thus far through four games. And the results that we're seeing is productivity, big numbers from this team. And from this defense, so the good out of this is easy. I mean, it's you know, if you're going good to bad and the ugly, the good is easy. It's the defense. We don't have to get cute about it. That's very much what the good is. The bad, and it's time we got to talk about this. The bad is the kicking game right now. They're kicking into the end zone on kickoffs. Chris Blewett's doing well there. He had three touchbacks on four kickoffs yesterday. I've always said, I think I've said it before here, I've said it for years, even after they moved the touchback line out to the 25 on kickoff, for me, if I have a kicker who can put the ball out of the end zone, I want him to do it. You know, I want him to do it. I just want him to line up and just kick the thing as far as you can and get a touchback. No chances of returns. I don't even want to bother with returns. If you can line up and kick it and get a touchback every time, do it. Who knows? I mean, you go to that Iowa game, they gave up that big return on Iowa's game-winning drive because they tried a squib kick, which is the right call in that situation. You have 52 seconds on the clock. You want to run the clock down. I understand that. But they end up giving up a return, and it gets out to the 30 or wherever it was. Whereas if they had gone into the, kicked it out of the end zone, got a touchback like they had through the rest of the game, maybe they end up, they give them the ball at the 25, and maybe Iowa ends up 5 yards short, and instead of a 57-yard field goal, it's a 62. Now, that kick would have been good from 62, because the kid nailed it. But, I think maybe even in that situation, you want to just have him kick a touchback. Don't even take a chance of a return. You know, instead of possibly running 7 or 8 seconds off the clock, just don't even give him a chance. And that's what Blewett did on Saturday at Virginia Tech. Three touchbacks on four kickoffs. And he's had, I'm trying to find his numbers here. Coming into the game, he had 18 total kickoffs and 11 touchbacks. So you add that in, it's 22 kickoffs and 14 touchbacks. That's pretty good. I'll take those numbers. I'm big on touchbacks. Blewett's field goals, though, and he had another miss yesterday. It was a blocked kick, and I think it was a block that you and I and everyone else probably saw coming for a long time, because he's been kicking some real line drives, and I don't think you needed to face Beamer ball to get one of those things blocked. You know, I know that's what Frank Beamer does, and that's what Virginia Tech is known for. So it's funny looking at their game notes that they give you, to just, I don't know if you've ever seen these things that these colleges, these SIDs put together, these game notes. It's got all the stats for the season and all the storylines and all this. I mean, Virginia Tech is like, looking at it right now, it's like 50 pages long. It's kind of ridiculous. But what they have, 45 pages, excuse me. Across the top of each page, it says this. It says 22 straight bowls, 11 conference titles, 4-time ACC champs, 233 wins, 135 blocked kicks, and 93 NFL draftees under Beamer. First of all, that 22 straight bowls, that thing's in jeopardy. Because I look down this list at Virginia Tech's schedule, and I don't know. They need four more wins to get to a bowl. It might be dicey. But really getting sidetracked here. But they mention it right here. 135 blocked kicks. Now it's 136 after Saturday. So it's obviously, I mean, they hang their hat on it. We know they hang their hat on it. They have this whole Beamer ball mystique about making plays on special teams and blocking kicks. You don't need to be Beamer ball. You don't need to have 135 blocked kicks under your head coach. You don't need to be known for that to eventually get your hands on one of these kicks that Chris Blewett's been putting up, because they've been line drive kicks. And I know I'm not the only one who's noticed it. I know a lot of people have noticed it and commented on it. And eventually one of those was going to get blocked. And now he's 4 of 6 on the season, or 4 of 7 on the season. And missed one against Youngstown State. He missed one at Akron. And he missed one on Saturday. He had the one blocked. And it's concerning. He's not kicking well. And he's made long kicks. He's made 45. He made from 48. And on Saturday, he made from 45 again. You know, he's missed 41, 34, and he had his blocked kick was 42. He's got a strong enough leg, but they need to figure something out. I mean, it's troubling right now, and it's not even getting into the punting. Ryan Winslow was not good on Saturday, and that's probably putting it nicely. Six punts. The average was 38.8 yards, but three touchbacks, zero inside the 20. On the season, he's now got 21 punts and only three have landed inside the 20. That's not good enough. You need to be able to do better, particularly with some of the things they're trying to do. And with the way their offense is playing, they're just not, when they're not moving the ball, they need to be able to affect field position. Right? I mean, that's such a big part of it. If your offense is struggling like their offense has been, and certainly like it was on Saturday, you need to be able to affect field position. And they haven't been. They haven't been affecting field position positively. I mean, I'm looking down here at the fourth quarter. Pitt's first drive of the fourth quarter, they punt, goes into the end zone for a touchback. Pitt's next drive, they ended with a missed field goal. Their following drive, they punt, and it's a short punt, and ends up Virginia Tech gets it at 38. They couldn't get any positive impact on field position at a time where they really needed it. They needed to back up Virginia Tech's offense and keep them away from cutting it, either cutting Pitt's lead to 1 point or potentially being able to take a shot at the end zone and win the damn game. They needed to affect field position positively, and they didn't do it with the kicking. And right now, Blewett and Winslow are both troubling, I think, if you're Pitt. I don't know if they have any other options. This is what people always ask. They got somebody else they can put out there. No. They're a college football program, and you usually have one guy you can count on as your punter. And your backup is probably a walk-on who you probably don't want to use. And no matter how much struggles your starter is having, you probably still don't want to go to the walk-on. I mean, you can't go find a free agent, although we've seen how effective finding free agent kickers has been in the NFL, but you can't just go find a free agent if it's college and you're looking for a new punter. So Pitt pretty much has to go with Winslow. Is what it comes down to. He's got to get better, though. He's got to get a lot better, and because he hasn't been... he hasn't been good this season. He hasn't been good enough. And until this offense makes some significant improvements, I don't know. You need to get more out of your punting game. So that's the bad. The good is the defense from Saturday. The bad is the kicking. And then the ugly. The ugly on Saturday for a whole lot of this game was the offensive line. And this is... I don't think it's as troubling a trend as some would make it out to be, but it was just downright ugly. I mean, Virginia Tech gave up a bunch of plays. Virginia Tech's offensive line they got beat sometimes, and sometimes they just let guys come free. I mean, Juan Price looked like he was unblocked a bunch of times. Now, part of that is him executing properly, and part of it was just Virginia Tech's offensive line blowing it. But Pitt's offensive line did that a whole bunch too and made life real difficult on Nate Peterman. Made life difficult for the running game to get rolling, although eventually they had some success, and we'll talk about how that happened in a minute. But they made life difficult on Nate Peterman, and the result was four sacks. Four sacks and four quarterback hurries. Peterman also ran the ball a bunch of times and scrambled a bunch of times. He got hit a lot. Nate Peterman got sacked four times. He also had 11 other rushing attempts, whether they were scrambles or design runs. And that's getting knocked around a whole lot for a guy who, in my opinion, is still getting comfortable playing as much as he's been playing. And I mean, he should be comfortable out there. He's played a lot of football in his past. He's played a good amount this year. This was the first time he really got knocked around as much as he did. And I don't think he responded well. I think it rattled him a little bit. And I think that's why their offense struggled so much. I think that's why he was 9 of 15 passing. I think people talk about, you know, he was missing wide open receivers or he wasn't reading the field much. Well, when you start getting banged up that much, you get a little bit jumpy. And I think this goes for a vast majority of quarterbacks. You start to get jumpy because you start feeling the pressure even when it's not there. And you start thinking you're about to get hit even when you're not. And when you're thinking you're about to get hit and you're feeling the pressure that's not there, you're either going to rush your throw or you're going to rush the decision to take off and run. And with the way Pitt had already established the idea that it wanted to run its quarterbacks on Saturday, that it was clear that they went into that game with the goal of getting the quarterbacks on the run, I think Peterman, on a lot of occasions, was way too quick to tuck the ball and run. And, you know, with the combination of, okay, this is what we want to take advantage of, you know, quarterback mobility or quarterback running, and then combining that with getting knocked around like he was, and feeling pressure that sometimes wasn't quite there yet, although a lot of times it was there, but feeling pressure a little bit quicker than he needed to, I think Peterman ended up rushing some of his decisions, whether it was who he was going to throw the ball to, how much he was going to scan the field, or whether he was going to tuck it in and run. And the result was that the offense just didn't really get going. And as much as we talk about Pitt's defense holding Virginia Tech to 100 yards of total offense, Pitt only had 276 total. 276 yards of offense, 110 passing yards, 166 on the ground. 276. If you flipped it, I mean, I don't think Virginia Tech's defense would look at it and say they played a bad game on Saturday, because they didn't play a bad game on Saturday. They played pretty well. They gave up a few big plays, kind of like what Pitt's defense has done this season, where it's played really well. And outside of just a few big plays, it's really been pretty close to dominant. That was Virginia Tech's defense isn't that far off from that mark. You hold a team under 300 total offense, you had a good day. They gave up 166, but as we know, 68 of those came on two plays, one drive. You know, if I want to pick at Virginia Tech, well, you know, Virginia Tech had 100 yards of total offense. 83 of those came on one drive. So, outside of that one drive, Virginia Tech had 17 yards of total offense, net. Well, I can pick at Pitt, too, and say, well, they had 166 yards of rushing, but 68 came on two carries by Quadri Olson in the first drive of the second half. But I digress. We're talking about the offensive line. And I think that was a big part of the reason, I think the play of the line is a big part of the reason that the offense struggled as much as it did on Saturday. And I think there's not just one reason for why the offensive line struggled and has struggled this season. First of all, they faced some good defensive fronts. I don't think we can ignore that. There are a number of things we could list first. That's certainly one of them. Akron, Iowa, Virginia Tech had good defensive fronts. This Saturday against Virginia, they're going to face another good defensive front. It should get easier after that. They won't face as good of a defensive front in the seven games after that as they faced in the last three, and they'll face again this week. So you do have to consider that. That is part of it. But that's not all of it. Losing Jared Jones-Smith is part of it. That's a very good player, but that's not all of it. Losing James Conner is a big part of it. Maybe bigger than losing Jared Jones-Smith, because James Conner, while I think last year's offensive line was very good, I think James Conner made them look even better. And he would have made this offensive line look even better. I don't know how much he would have helped the pass protection. I think if the right tackle or the right guard are going to turn a guy free, I don't know if James Conner is going to be able to overcome all of that. But certainly in the running game, he would have made this offensive line look better. You can't overlook the losses of Jones-Smith and Conner. Those are big. Do they need personnel changes? That remains to be seen. I see the same thing you see. I have the same questions about Artie Rowell's effectiveness right now. I'm not sure I don't know that he's playing very well. Your option would be to move Alex Officer to center and put Alex Bookshear into the starting lineup at right guard. I don't know if that's a great option either, because I don't know if Officer's playing all that well. And maybe they're trying to decide. Bookshear got a series on Saturday. Maybe they're trying to decide between Bookshear and Rowell. That if they feel like Rowell is the better option, then they keep Rowell at center and Officer at right guard. If they feel like Bookshear is the better option, then they move Officer to center and put Bookshear at right guard. I don't know if that's what they're looking to do. I don't know if they're looking to really make any personnel changes. outside of that one series when Bookshire played at right guard, they stuck with the same five for the rest of the game. And then there's a question of scheme. And this offensive line is being asked to do different things than they did last year. I don't think you can deny it. I don't think there's any denying that. They're playing a different way, and I don't necessarily know if it's tailored to their strengths. These are offensive linemen who are recruited to play a certain way, who have been coached to play a certain way, and when they play that way, they're rather effective. And they have been rather effective. And the times in the last four games, each of the four games, when they've done some of those things that they've been doing in the past, when they've done some of those things that they've been good at in the past, they've been pretty good at them again this year. I wondered if over the course of the off week, the coaches would focus more on or hone in on the things the offensive line had been doing well. I think we saw a little bit of that. I think we saw some of that. I don't know if we saw enough of it. I still think you have to go back to the drawing board on the offensive line and what you're asking the offensive line to do and pare it down even more. Even if you have to cut some plays out of your, particularly the run. I mean, we're just kind of talking about the run game for now. If you have to cut some plays out of your run game playbook, do it. Because there are certain things that you do. I mean, running power is a perfect example. I mean, when they run power, they're still good at it. Because that's what Dorian Johnson and Adam Biznawati and Adam Biznavati, I guess we're saying this year, it's a V, and Alex Officer were recruited to do. They're recruited to run power. So do it. Do it with those guys because that's what they're good at. And you need to find a way to get this offense rolling. So do what they're good at and have success with it. The pass protection, I don't know what to do there. I'm going to chalk some of that up to, particularly yesterday or on Saturday, I'm going to chalk some of that up or a lot of that up to Virginia Tech being good up front. I mean, they challenged Pitt a lot last year, certainly 2 years ago at Lane Stadium. They challenged Pitt a whole lot. They sacked Tom Savage 8 or 9 times. But you still, there has to be better play. They have to improve. And you need it, I mean, obviously, you need it for so many reasons. You need it for Nate Peterman to get comfortable back there. Because I still think, and inevitably the debate has come out about Wojtek versus Peterman. And this debate's going to happen all season. When you had, this situation play out the way it did with Wojtek and Peterman, you are inevitably going to have a debate about these two guys throughout the course of the season, no matter what decision you made. If you were Pat Narduzzi and you chose to stick with Chad Wojtek, you'd be second-guessed with that every time Wojtek threw an incomplete pass. And if you chose to go with Nate Peterman as they did, you'd be second-guessed on that every time Peterman throws an incomplete pass. You created the situation. And I don't think Pat Narduzzi should have made his decision based on or tried to avoid the situation in order to avoid public criticism. You have to go with the guy that you feel like gives you the best chance, and they feel like Peterman gives them the best chance. I tend to agree. I still think he probably is the best option for running this offense the way they want to run it. But he's not going to be a very good option if he can't get comfortable back there. He's not going to be a very good option if you can't block for him. Now, it was interesting to see what they did with Chad Wojtek on Saturday. And I think I know I talked about it on the Panther Lair postgame. If you listen to the Panther Lair postgame on Thursday, I talked a lot about how what I would do would involve running Chad Wojtek in this game. Because Virginia Tech, not only did Wojtek go for 118 yards against Virginia Tech last year on the ground, but Virginia Tech, since the start of 2014, has given up more non-sack rushing yards to quarterbacks than any other team in the FBS by a wide margin. According to David Hale from ESPN.com, I got to give him credit because that's a great stat. Virginia Tech has given up more non-sack rushing yards to opposing quarterbacks than any other team in the country. And what I said last Thursday on the Panther Lair show here on Triple Live Radio was, look, they're vulnerable. This is what you can do. Use Wojtek. And sure enough, we saw it. We saw it on the first drive. Pitt came out. Peterman got sacked on Pitt's first offensive snap of the game, and Wojtek came in and ran for 27 yards. I can't read my own writing. 27 yards. 26 yards, whatever it is. And they switched back to Peterman for a couple snaps, and then they went back to Vojtěch. And it ended up, Vojtěch ended up getting five carries and finished with 37 yards on five carries. But they didn't go back to him. They didn't go back to him at all in the second quarter. And they didn't go back to him in the fourth quarter. I think he had one carry. I think he was out for a snap. He came out for one other snap, and it was a false start. So then they went back to Peterman. But they didn't go back to it. It was working. And Pat Narduzzi said after the game, well, Virginia Tech changed up what they were doing. They made it very difficult. They put a lot of guys in the box. They brought their safety 2 feet from the yard line or 2 yards from the line of scrimmage or something like that. I understand all that. You've got to be ready for that. And you've got to have a counter ready because you've got something that can work, that has a history of working against this defense. And they went away from it. I think they could have helped themselves more by using Chad Vojtěch more in that game. Now, I'm not saying that they should have switched starting quarterbacks and Vojtěch should be the starter and they should run whatever you want to call it, the wing T or the option offense for the rest of the season. But I do think they could have taken advantage of that matchup a little bit more. For his part, Vojtěch was pretty game after the game. He was a pretty stand-up guy. He said he likes that role. He hopes he can keep that role up for the rest of the season. It'd be interesting to see if they do. Because I think even if you want Peterman to be your guy, even if Peterman is your guy, and I said I think he should be, I think that's the right decision to make, in my opinion. I think you can still add an extra element to this offense and give opposing defenses something extra to prepare for by using that Vojtěch package a few times each game. Maybe it gives you a spark if your offense is lagging a little bit. Maybe if your offense is rolling, it expands even more and keeps defenses even more off balance. You got to add some pass options in there. He has to have the option to throw the ball. I don't think there's any question about that, or else they're just going to defenses will just do what Virginia Tech did and load up the box and have a safety just basically key on Vojtěch the whole game or whenever he's in there. So you got to have a pass option in there, and I think they will, and I think they do, actually. I think that if they had an opportunity to call more plays for Vojtěch on Saturday, I think you would have seen some pass options come out. But I think it's something they can use and they should use going forward to keep opposing defenses guessing and to keep them off balance a little bit and to give them something extra to prepare for. It's a weapon. It's a weapon that you can take advantage of. And right now, you're kind of, I don't want to say you're lacking for weapons because you've got Tyler Boyd and I think Quadri Olson looks pretty good and I like these two tight ends a whole lot. But any additional weapon you can come up with for this offense is something you should come up with. Unless it's throwing the offensive line off to switch back and forth. And maybe that's the case, but I think you've got something you can use there and capitalize on and make some plays with. I think you've got to do it going forward. The other offensive change, I wanted to talk about a couple offensive changes. That was one they made before the game. They came in with that game plan of using Vojtěch a little bit more, and they did it, and they also ran Peterman as well. But the other offensive change, this was in the second half, and you saw it, I saw it, I had it in my notes, it came out Pitt's first play of the second half. Let me just find the play right here. Where is it? End of half, where is it? There we go. Boyd takes the kickoff, returns it, good return, 30-yard return, and first down, they come out, no Tyler Boyd on the field. It's J.P. Holtz, Scott Orndorff, Jamar Parrish, George Aston, and Quadri Olson. It's a jumbo package. Three tight ends, a fullback, and a running back. Or if you want to call Parrish a fullback still, it's two tight, two fullbacks, and a running back. And the first play, Quadri Olson goes 43 yards. Next play, 25 yards for a touchdown. This jumbo package that they went to was a big change and a significant change. Pat Narduzzi after the game said, let me just find his quote. Here's what Narduzzi said. Quote, we rushed the ball in the first quarter. We didn't as well in the second, and Coach Chaney came out and put some more beef in the game because they were just outmanning us in the box. So we said, if they're going to outman us in the box, then we'll outman them in the box. So we put a few more pounds on the field, and it was successful for us in the third quarter. And it was. Pitt ultimately ran 17 plays in the second half with that formation. They didn't use that personnel grouping at all in the first half. You didn't see it at all with Holtz, Orndorff, and Parrish, plus Aston, and a running back on the field at the same time. So they didn't do that at all in the first half. In the second half, they ran it 17 times out of, by my count. These are all according to my unofficial notes. They used that formation 17 times, got 109 yards rushing out of it, and 28 yards passing. And this was one of the best plays. And I meant to they had that formation. They had that personnel grouping with the three tight ends, Holtz, Orndorff, and Parrish, the fullback Aston, and Olsen. And they ran play action. And they only did this once. They ran the ball. If they used this formation 17 times, they ran the ball 16 times. But they ran play action. And I'm watching the play action, and I'm looking, and I'm saying, there's nobody running a route. Nobody's running downfield. And then I notice Scott Orndorff, only guy running downfield. He was the only one. And Peterman just floated the pass to him because Virginia Tech followed Orndorff. They didn't bite on the play action, or at least they didn't all bite on the play action. I think they had at least one, if not two, guys running with Orndorff. But Peterman floated the pass up there, and Orndorff caught it for a 28-yard gain. Heck of a play. Really, Jim Chaney's play calling has taken a lot of criticism, and I understand that. That comes with it. If you're the offensive coordinator, you're going to get second-guessed. But that play was a pretty sweet little play, particularly because you've got this personnel grouping that every time you've seen it, you've used it, you've run the ball. And Virginia Tech knows that every time you've had it, you've run the ball. And they ran a play action and executed it perfectly, and they got 28 yards out of it. So 137 yards total for that personnel grouping. 109 on the ground, 28 passing on 17 plays. The other 13 plays they ran in the second half, they used, you know, either two receivers, three receivers, that kind of formation, those kind of personnel groupings. They had one or two where it was Boyd with Holtz, Orndorff, and Aston, and the running back. But the other 13 plays gained a total of 32 yards of offense. So Pitt made an adjustment, and we always talk about that's one of the things fans and media always go to is adjustments, second half adjustments. Who made the half of time adjustments? Did they adjust? They didn't make any adjustments. They did make adjustments. Well, this was an adjustment, and this was a big one, and it was pretty effective. First of all, I got the go-ahead touchdown, or the game-winning touchdown on the board for Pitt, with Quadri Olsen running the first two carries of the second half, running out of that formation. And second of all, I mean, it was mostly effective. I mean, the effectiveness sort of waned a little bit as the game went on, but that 28-yard pass certainly worked, and that was set up by the formation. That was a halftime adjustment, and it was a pretty good one, and it was a pretty effective one for Pitt. All right, we're running low on time, so let's jump to the three key stats. That was one of them, actually, the jumbo package rushing. 109 yards on 16 carries plus a 28-yard pass on one pass attempt. Pretty effective adjustment there for Pitt's offense. The other key stat is 100. We're keeping it 100. Red 100 emoji right here. Keeping it 100. 100 yards of total offense. And I figure it's been a while since the start of the show, and I repeated that multiple times. But 100 yards of total offense that Pitt allowed. Panthers are playing really well right now. And it's evidenced by the fact that they've now had two games this season where they've held opponents to 105 yards or less of total offense. They've done it twice this season. In the previous 17 years, they only did it two times. And that was Akron in 98 and Delaware in 2014. And then the other key stat is the sacks. 7 sacks for Pitt on Saturday. 17 on the season through 4 games. 17 sacks for Pitt's defense. Last year, they finished with 19 sacks. The entire season, 13 games, 19 sacks. So far this season, 17 sacks in 4 games. Last year's defense didn't get sack number 17 until the bowl game. Pitt's got sack number 17 after 4 games. Nobody in the ACC has more sacks per game, and you can see the impact. Thursday, we're going to talk more about last year's defense versus this year's defense. We're going to talk more about, why it's so much better, what really changed, how this defense has become so much more effective, or why it has become so much more effective. Definitely one of the big parts is getting more pressure and making more plays in the backfield and causing more havoc and getting more sacks. When you have 19 sacks in 13 games, you're not doing a good enough job. You're not getting enough pressure, and you're going to give up plays because you're not getting into the backfield. You're not impacting the opposing offense. When you have 17 sacks through four games, you're making plays. You're making an impact. And Brendan Motley, the Virginia Tech quarterback, got knocked around yesterday, or on Saturday, excuse me. He got knocked around a lot. Seven sacks as evidence. All right, we are almost running out here. I wanted to talk about the fourth downs because that was such a big talking point after the Iowa game when Pitt decided not to go for it on fourth and inches in Iowa territory. And I think we all, as we debated what Pitt should have done, and I think we all kind of agreed that if it was us calling the plays, we would have gone for it. I would have. I think you would have too. Pat Narduzzi sort of defended it. It said what their plan was. I guess he didn't defend it as much as he said, well, here's what we were trying to do. It didn't work, so obviously it was the wrong decision, but here's what we were trying to do. I think along with that, we were all really curious to see what would happen if Pitt was in that situation again. What the Panthers would do, what Pat Narduzzi specifically would do if they were in that situation again. And sure enough, there it was in the fourth quarter. Virginia Tech had just kicked a field goal to cut the lead to 17-13. Pitt had the ball. They were driving. It was 4th-and-1 from the Pitt 49. And Pitt went for it. And really didn't hesitate. And they ran the ball with Quadri Olson. They didn't do a toss play like they had done. Because you go to that Iowa game, the 4th-and-inches, yes, I would have gone for it. The bad call was on 3rd-and-2, and they like tossed it out to the right to Darren Hall, and he ended up, you know, falling short. You just need to run the thing. Go between the tackles. Olson, I don't know if he was just inside the left tackle or if he ran outside the left tackle on this 4th-and-1, but he goes for 13 yards. And, you know, I mean, they're arguably worse field position than they were in the Iowa game when it was 4th-and-inches in Iowa territory. This was 4th-and-1 from the Pitt 49. But it seemed like there wasn't a whole lot of hesitation. They had a little extra time to talk about it because Tyler Boyd looked like he was over the line and had gained a first down on the 3rd-and-10. They ended up reviewing the play and decided that he was short by a yard. So they had a little extra time during that review to talk about it and kind of decide what they wanted to do. But still, I don't think there was ever any doubt that they were going to go for it on fourth down there. Is that a result of what happened in the Iowa game? I don't know. I don't know if Pat Narduzzi would ever admit it one way or the other. But it certainly was a change from the Iowa game. The other fourth down, and this was later on that drive, 4th-and-8 from the Virginia Tech 36, and Pitt punts. And the immediate reaction was, wait, you just went for it on fourth down from your own 49. Why are you punting from the Virginia Tech 36? And here's what I think. Here's what I think. Because people said, it was, you know, cowards. They didn't want to try it. Why are they so scared? They should go for it. I think the plan was to go for it on fourth down. And I think that plan was in place two plays earlier. Because they had 3rd-and-7 from the Virginia Tech 35. And they handed the ball off. And I don't think that was a scared call. I don't think that was playing a conservative. I think the idea was hand it to Olson on 3rd-and-7. Hope that Virginia Tech is playing you to pass, or playing the pass, so you can get enough running room to pick up 4 yards, maybe 5 or even 6 on 3rd-and-7. Get somewhere from 3 to 6 yards. I mean, get the first down if you can. But the idea is try and run a play that's going to get 3 to 6 yards, ideally 4 or 5, and set up a 4th-and-3, 4th-and-2, 4th-and-1, and go for it. I think they called the run on 3rd-and-7 so they could run a play on 4th down. I think they intended to keep that drive going. I don't think they intended to punt. But Olson was stopped for a yard loss on 3rd-and-7. And so instead of 4th-and-5, or not even 4th-and-5, instead of 4th-and-3, or 4th-and-2, or 4th-and-4 on the long end, it was 4th-and-8. And there, I don't think you have an option. I think 4th-and-8 is too long of a play. It's too long of a down and distance. Now, of course, it was a touchback, so you ended up with a net change of 16 yards. And then it didn't matter because Terrace Webb intercepted Brendan Motley on the next play. So maybe it all worked out. But that's what I think happened on those fourth downs. I do think you saw a slight change in philosophy on the 4th-and-1 where they went for it And I think you saw a slight change in philosophy in the fact that they were willing to go for it on... They were trying to set up a fourth down they could go for it on. I think that was the intention on that one. All right, we're all out of time here for the post game. It's been fun as always. It's always more fun to talk after a win. Well, no, sometimes it's fun to talk after a loss because there's always more things to complain about. But we'll be back on Thursday, of course, for the Pantherware show on Thursday, 2 p.m. here on Triple Live Radio Thursday afternoon. Stay tuned to the message boards of the website, panther-lair.com. And stay tuned to Triple Live Radio for coverage of all Pittsburgh sports, including Pitt. We'll talk to you Thursday afternoon, 2 o'clock. I'm Chris Peek. This is the Panther Lair Postgame on Triple Live Radio.